Stellantis is set to lay off about 400 workers at its Jeep Cherokee plant in Illinois, saying the layoffs will take effect as early as mid-January. And David Manilow is back for our weekly conversation about the business of food, the joy of eating, and the challenges of working in the service industry. This week, he recommends local bakeries and shares highlights from his recent conversation with Stephanie Hart of Brown Sugar Bakery.
Even on your website, you basically describe yourself as kind of a Southern bakery. What is a Southern bakery exactly?
I mean, we just make the things that my grandmother made. My grandmother was from the South, and we made those Southern cakes made with really good ingredients.
I'm Amy Guth, and this is Crane's Daily Gist for Wednesday, November 17th. When it comes to a professional like your doctor or lawyer, you want someone who knows you well. Wintrust believes you should have the same relationship with your banker, someone you can call directly and know they'll understand your concerns. Thousands of local business owners called their Wintrust banker when they needed Paycheck Protection Program loans. They called, Wintrust answered, and helped more than 11,000 local businesses secure funding. Learn more at wintrust.com/dailygist. Member FDIC. All right, David Manilow is back for our weekly conversation about the business of food, the challenges of working in the service industry, and of course, with recommendations of places we should all check out. And this week, we are talking about bakeries. I think it's a good time of year for that. It sounds very cozy and autumnal. There's so many bakeries in this town. There's so many to look at. Let's start with kind of the classic ones, the ones that have been around for a while. What are your recommendations there?
And when you say been around for a while, they're not like restaurants who have been around for a while. For instance, like Roser's Bakery in Humboldt Park, 1911.
That's a minute. Yeah.
They've been around, still run by the same family, I think fourth generation in. And they do lots of special occasion cakes. You can build your own cake online. You can send a picture in. And now, of course, the difference probably between now and 1911 is they're on Instagram, which I think almost all of these places are on Instagram because cakes look pretty good on Instagram.
Oh, baking Instagram's a whole thing. That's a whole genre of things. Yeah.
They're at 3216 West North Avenue. Dinkles, which I must admit I've been to quite a few times, they are not quite as old. They started in the 1920s. Okay. Also still in the same family. I think one of the son-in-laws of one of the founder's family now runs it. They're more straightforward. They're a charming place. They're known for their cakes. Chocolate donuts are fabulous. They're also known for their Stollen, mm-hmm. which is a German kind of fruit and nut cake, I believe, that is really popular around Christmas time. They're at 3329 North Lincoln. Weber's Bakery, west on Archer, 7055, since 1930. Same thing, breads, pastries, and cakes, kind of the traditional stuff. And then you have kind of the one that's a little bit of a slacker, 1948. That is Lutz's Bakery on Montrose in Western. They have, you know, handmade marzipan treats, cupcakes, cakes, et cetera, in normal times, when I'm talking about like non-pandemic times, they have seating with servers and you just walk in there and it's a charming place.
I mean, you walk into any bakery and it just smells good. And it smells like, you know, nostalgia, I think, but especially those bakeries that have been around for such a long time. It's just like decades of sugar in the air that you can kind of smell. It's so lovely.
And what a great profession to be in when every customer that comes in oohs and ahs at what you do. Like, oh, I want that. I want that. I'll eat that one later. And speaking of that, I had a chance to talk to Stephanie Hart, who runs Brown Sugar Bakery on 75th Street. And she is also very entrenched in kind of like the traditional baked goods, desserts. And she just learned a lot from her grandma and is kind of trying to recreate what her grandma did for her when she was growing up.
You are spot on. Growing up as a child in the 60s and 70s, people just still got together and they loved on each other with food. So on Sunday, everyone would pack up, come to grandma's house. You knew you were going to get something really special to eat. And at the end of the evening, it was crowned off with an amazing dessert. And I love the way it made me feel. And I just adore that I can share that with other people.
Well, you know, I came from a not a cake grandma, but a chocolate chip cookie making grandma. So to this day, it makes me think of my mom and my grandma whenever there's fresh baked chocolate chip cookies, and I'm still a huge fan of chocolate chip cookies.
I love chocolate chip cookies as well. And really, it's just about that exchange that comes from somebody you love. And that sweet thing helps make a memory. And when you get it and it's good, it takes you right back there. And isn't that fun? It's like time travel.
I love that. And I feel like the other thing about bakeries in particular, when it's usually kind of around a special occasion, right? I mean, you rarely just kind of get a cake because it's Monday, right? Those are for weddings and birthdays and important things. So there's kind of the celebratory piece of it too.
I would say absolutely, except for this week as I was doing research for this
Right.
podcast.
Or David's here. Yeah.
I did find myself grabbing a lot of cupcakes, donuts, slices of cake.
People get a cake and it reminds them of really good times, and it's fun to see that in folks' eyes. And, they talk about it and they share it with other people.
It must be just like always a happy place, right? People are coming in with smiles on their faces and leaving with smiles on their faces.
It's really hard to talk about cake and be mad at the same time. We often say too that we're in the industry where folks are showing up with a little stress, but we really hope that they leave out a little better. And you take the word stressed and turn it around, it's dessert. So I feel like we have the we help out. We do a service.
Well, in your conversation with Stephanie, did she indicate kind of any favorites? I know that's probably like picking a favorite child, but what were her favorite things?
Well, she started with a pineapple cake. That was the thing that kind of made her want to get into this business. And it's something I think that is dear to her heart.
The cakes that are most popular though, especially in these times, are the southern cakes. And a cake that's really hard to make at home is a caramel cake. And it's only hard because you're going to burn it the first time you do it, and probably the next six times you do it too. So that's our most popular seller, and we call her Chicago's cake, because people in Chicago love their caramel. They just do.
I'm a big caramel fan, but I have a question, because even on your website, you basically describe yourself as kind of a southern bakery. What is a southern bakery exactly?
I mean, we just make the things that my grandmother made. My grandmother was from the South, and we made those southern cakes made with really good ingredients. Simple. I do what I do. We didn't have things like tiramisu and angel food cake and those kinds of things. And I didn't grow up eating all kinds of torts and flans, and not that I don't adore those things as well, but they're not what I had. We had German chocolate cake and red velvet cake and double chocolate, yellow chocolate. We had a lemon cake that my grandmother used to make, and I cannot find anyone that makes lemon jelly. She used to make lemon jelly, and we called it lemon sunshine. And I've got the frosting for that cake, but I don't make lemon jelly. So, just those kind of cakes. I do make a jelly cake at Christmas time, where we literally take grape jelly and put it on yellow cake, and it's actually really wonderful. And that is so southern. Like, I mean, I get old people coming in and say, "I bet you don't make a jelly cake." And I'm like, "I bet I do."
And there's so many home bakers. I mean, again, Instagram is filled with people baking and doing things, and baking was such a big activity during the earlier parts of the pandemic. Did she have any advice for home bakers of how they can be more successful with what they're doing?
I think her advice is be precise.
Baking is science, cooking is art. Follow the instructions. It is a chemical reaction that happens in the oven, and you don't get to be as creative. I think that finding the creativeness in it is in how exact you can be. And so if you want to be a successful baker, learn to follow instructions, learn to measure correctly. Those are the two biggest things besides all the love. Because even if it goes kind of wrong, it's kind of hard to mess up sugar and butter if you like sugar and butter. And I like sugar and butter, and you add a little bit of flour to it. And if it doesn't turn out quite right, it's still going to taste good, right? My cakes always taste better than they look, which is wonderful because the object is to create something that is really delicious. It might slide a little, and that's okay. We don't mind. We push it back while we lick our finger.
So you had a special visitor a little while back. Vice President Kamala Harris showed up. What was that like?
I was at our factory, which in 2020, we took on the old Cupid Candy building on 76th and Western, where they manufactured candy from 1956. The company was actually founded in 1936, but from 56 to the time of their closing, they were at 7637 Southwestern. So I was there and I literally thought, oh, the team is trying to get me because they couldn't get me on April Fool's, which was Saturday. This was the following Tuesday. I'm like, you guys really think I'm dumb? And then they called me on video phone and all they did was show me the people walking around the bakery. And literally the Secret Service was in there sweeping the bakery.
Oh, wow.
No warning at all. No warning, nothing. And I got in my car and I got to the Dan Ryan in 6 minutes from 76th and Western. And then I saw they had it cut off and I looked at the people and I'm like, I'm going to miss her this time. I guess this is something she does. She likes German chocolate cake. And when she visits different places, she goes and gets a slice and asked, and we were referred. And that was just amazing feeling for me because, you know, it's the vice president. I'm not sure what you refer to the vice president, but you're not trying to make a bad impression. So
so maybe the friends that she asked, maybe they were like the Obamas. Maybe they said, hey, you're building a library here. You must know some good spots.
Chef Eric from Virtue, Eric Williams from Virtue, texts me, the Obamas are raving about your caramel cake. And he chose to serve them the caramel cake at a dinner that he was catering for them. And I was just like, wow, I got the text. I think it was September 26th because I looked down and I'm like, oh my God, that says he said the Obamas. Oh, it was just really amazing. So it's fun. And they felt the same way. I mean, Michelle said this cake brought back memories of her childhood. And that's the cool thing about serving desserts is that it doesn't matter if it's what your grandma or what your family served you, but when you kind of feel that love, it still brings back the memory, which is cool. And being located at Navy Pier kind of let me know that because people from Dubai love the cake and they say the same thing. And people from Korea that visit are like, wow. And, you know, I've heard this is just like the caramel my grandmother made for us in Guadalajara. And I'm like, oh, really? Wow. So it's a universal feeling, even if it is a Southern dessert, people like the feeling they get from it. So
I love that.
So do you bake? That's my question.
I do. In fact, I'm from a restaurant family and spent part of my earlier career as a pastry chef. And my transition was food writing. That was my transition into journalism. My heart was always in it. That's what I was always kind of aiming to do. But it was, you know, very easy to kind of follow the family footsteps there for quite a while before anybody would pay me to write or broadcast.
That's fascinating. So, and did you find that the baking was like, it helped you kind of like combine science and art, or does your brain go to more of the science side and less to the art side?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's science and art, but it's also, there's the solitary meditative piece of it, of doing that work, but then there's the public facing of planning with the bride and groom or the birthday celebrator or whatever it is to kind of the thing you're going to make. So there's a social piece and an introvert piece that I like too.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah.
So it's like there's a whole creative aspect to it when you're, especially when you're working with a customer just versus just doing it for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So when everybody started baking earlier in the pandemic, I got it right away. I was like, that's because there's like a therapeutic quality to it. You can kind of work out. You know, of course, there's some like old school little old ladies that would say, don't bake when you're worried or if you're in a bad mood, you're going to put those feelings into your cake and it won't turn out as good.
Well, we must have been in good mood in our house because I had some really wonderful banana bread that I did not bake, but my wife did. So
you have to bake it with love when you do it. All right. Well, let's talk about some other bakeries. We talked about Stephanie's Place, Brown Sugar Bakery. What other kind of newer bakeries did you take a look at this week?
There's Aya Pastry in Westtown on Grand. And you know what? I talked to them actually a little bit about, you know, how they survived the pandemic. And they said when it first hit, about 80% of their business was wholesale. So when restaurants closed down, they were hurting, right? But they kind of pivoted, you know, more to go. They told me they never laid off anybody. And now things are back pretty much to normal and they're doing great. It's owned by Aya Fukai, who's a James Beard nominated pastry chef. And they have absolutely beautiful cakes. I had a Samoa cake, like the Girl Scouts.
Ooh.
My favorite Girl Scout cookie. Also.
Same.
Yeah. Coconut, you know, chocolate, caramel. I mean, it was, and I think that's their bestseller, at least what they're known for. So that was awesome. There's Hendrix, which is on 100 West Walton, which they make homemade Belgian chocolates, tarts, Napoleons, Madeleines. They have rich, decadent, beautiful cakes, and they do a really nice job. And it's pretty centrally located. I mean, close to downtown. La Fournette, which is French, Wells and North Avenue, they actually provide a lot of their goods to restaurants, probably a lot of their bread too. A lot of these places, of course, make bread, but we're really talking about desserts. They have mini Madeleines, and Madeleines are kind of French small sponge cakes, as you know.
Delicious is what they are.
With a distinctive shell-like shape, I believe. You have all kinds of stuff that, in different flavors, vanilla, chocolate, lemon, raspberry, pistachio. And they're really noted French pastry chefs, though, in Chicago. And finally, I was at a fundraiser for the organization Pilot Light, which is a really great organization that's created by some acclaimed Chicago chefs. And they provide food education to students and parents and teachers across Chicago. And at the gala, with actually real humans at the gala, this was last week, they provided the goodie bag. Lost Larson did. Okay. So Lost Larson provided the goodie bag. And they had an almond cake with lingonberries that was so good that I drove to Andersonville to Lost Larson to pick up some lingonberry cake. They also have carrot cake. They have a lot of lovely croissants and a really great blueberry muffin, which I ate on the ride home. They're at 5318 North Clark. Bobby Schaefer, who is the founder and the chef there, pastry chef, he cooked at Blue Hill at Stone Barns in New York, and also Grace, which was the 3-star Michelin restaurant in Chicago. And so he's pretty noted. And, you know, those are just some. There's, as you mentioned, pastry shops and bake shops all over the city, and I'm sure people have their favorites. But those are just some kind of the old ones that have been around and some of the new ones.
Yeah. So you had a lot of sugar over the last week to do this. What stands out? What were kind of some of your favorites, or what's your all-time favorite dessert?
There's two of them. One, I've been lucky enough to have Mindy Siegel from Hot Chocolate, the restaurant, bake a couple of cakes for me. Okay. So yes, I'm spoiled. And she just makes a chocolate cake, yellow, and, you know, absolutely fabulous. The most memorable dessert I ever had, for strange reason, I must say, I am all in on chocolate, just so you got that. I was in New York, and I was at restaurant Danielle, which is a pretty high-end, very known restaurant. And all it was this fabulous coconut sorbet with a dark chocolate shell on it. I don't know what decade it even was in. I still remember it like it was yesterday. So yes. So, and maybe it was just the simplicity of it. And maybe it's just something that is so simple that he could do so well and so much better than everyone else that made it memorable for me. But I still remember it. I wish somebody could recreate that for me.
You know, my rule for dessert menus is if you can't order something that you'll see everywhere, unless it's a place like they're known for the Madeleines or they're known for this. I always try to find the weirdest thing on the menu and just say they wouldn't put it on there if it wasn't delicious and cool. So that's kind of my dessert ordering philosophy.
Well, that's a good one. I don't know if I have the same philosophy on regular menu, but I do think if somebody can make something, I'm talking savory versus sweet now, that you've had dozens of times that is so much better than everyone else that you've had it for, I always say, oh, that person really is something special or knows really some secret that somebody else does. So whether it's a roasted chicken or a veal chop or, you know, vegetables, you know, it could be anything. Those are memorable to me as well.
I feel like we should have that episode at some point of like, where would you, what's the dish that you would cross town to have? It's like a common dish that, you know, that's everywhere. I think that would be an interesting conversation. We should do that at some point.
I love it. We should have people call in and tell us their travel dishes, you know, how far they'd go. How far would you go? You know, well, we're lucky in Chicago because, you know, if you live in especially some of the Western cities, some of these people, it's not unusual for them to drive an hour and 20 minutes to dinner, right? For us, we've got things pretty close by, or you can hop on the, you know, the L or drive or whatever. But yes, I think it's a great question.
I think we just opened a can of worms with that. So to be continued on that.
It's a good can.
It's a great can. But I think we just created a sub podcast genre here. So David, what's coming up in the week ahead?
we're taking the week off because it's Thanksgiving week. And since...
Oh, that's right. Gosh, it's already here.
Since Thanksgiving dinner is one of my all-time favorites, I realized all I would do is tell people to go out and get turkey and stuffing and mashed potatoes or sweet potatoes and corn or peas or whatever you have at Thanksgiving. So I think we're going to take the week off and then come back after everyone is well fed.
Sounds good. Well, I will see you then. Thanks so much, David.
All right. Thanks, Amy. Talk to you soon.
Coming up, local upscale grocery chain Foxtrot continues its expansion, planning to open a flagship store at Tribune Tower. We'll talk about that and more right after this. Is your student taking the SAT, ACT, or a high school admissions test this year? Academic Approach wants to help them get prepared. Academic Approach's time-tested tutoring programs ensure students grow their academic skills, improving their performance on standardized tests. The work together begins with a consultation with an Academic Approach director, who will meet with you and your student to discuss their unique needs. Then Academic Approach creates an effective, fully customized study plan that targets their goals and matches them with a tutor who will be by their side, guiding them through instruction and practice throughout their tutoring journey. Get in touch today to learn how Academic Approach can help your student transform into a confident, successful test taker. Learn more at academicapproach.com/dailygist.
This is the Crane's Daily Gist with Amy Guth.
Automaker Stellantis said it plans to cut about 400 workers at its Belvidere assembly plant, which builds Jeep Cherokees. The company said the layoffs will take effect as early as January 14th and sent worker adjustment and retraining notification notices on November 10th to affected hourly employees, the state of Illinois, the city of Belvidere, and the UAW. The company said in a statement, quote, "As we continue to balance global sales with production of the Jeep Cherokee produced at the Belvidere assembly plant, which has been further exacerbated by the unprecedented global microchip shortage, Stellantis has determined that additional staffing actions are needed as a result of changes in the plant's operations." The company also said it will make every effort to place laid-off hourly workers in open full-time positions as they become available based on seniority. The plant has had significant downtime this year and already cut its second shift. The Belvidere plant, even before the chip shortage, struggled with downtime as the automaker sought to match Cherokee production with demand, which this year has dropped 20% through September, and third quarter sales fell 72%. However, Crane's sister publication Automotive News reports that Auto Forecast Solutions is expecting production of the Dodge Challenger and Charger vehicles to move to Belvidere in 2024. Those redesigned models would be on the Stellantis electrified STLA large platform. Auto Forecast Solutions also predicted that a new electrified Chrysler crossover will be produced alongside the next generation muscle cars in Belvidere on the same platform. The owner of a landmark West Loop office building that saw its vacancy rise as the COVID-19 pandemic began has handed the property over to its lender, adding to the number of downtown office landlords succumbing to fallout from the crisis. According to Cook County property records, last month, a venture of Pennsylvania-based Alliance HP transferred the leasehold interest in the 12-story building at 300 West Adams to an entity managed by Morgan Stanley through a deed in lieu of foreclosure. The Morgan Stanley venture was a trustee for bondholders in a $25 million loan that the Alliance venture held on the building. The debt was packaged with other loans and sold off to commercial mortgage-backed securities investors. But the move highlights the difficulties facing downtown office building owners with significant blocks of vacancy while demand for workspace declines. Crane's Danny Ecker is reporting the story in detail.
We're starting to see the downtown office distress pile up a little bit here. You recently had a massive foreclosure suit against the owner of the Civic Opera building, an owner handing over the keys to the property at 65 East Wacker Place. And here you've got a building in a pretty high-performing section of downtown before the pandemic, and an owner saying this isn't worth fighting foreclosure to try to keep. It shows what it's like right now to own a downtown office building that has a lot of vacant space. And it's likely a sign of what might be coming at a fairly steady pace in the years ahead as office leases expire and owners have to find new users in what right now is a pretty soft market and could be for some time. What's interesting about this particular one was that Alliance is actually holding on to the ground beneath the building, at least for now, and has handed back only the leasehold interest. So this group actually keeps a financial stake in the property while it walks away from owning the building itself.
Narrative Science, a Chicago-based software maker that came out of Northwestern University 11 years ago, will be acquired by Salesforce. A blog post announcing the deal didn't disclose the price, but Narrative Science will become part of Tableau, a maker of business intelligence software that was also previously purchased by Salesforce. Narrative Science, which recently topped Crane's list of most innovative companies in Chicago for the quality of its patents, specializes in turning business data into information in narrative form. The company's software initially was used to turn sports stats like box scores into news stories. The storytelling product evolved over time, generating customized reports for customers of financial services companies. Narrative Science raised about $43 million from backers that include Chicago-based venture capital fund Jump Capital. Foxtrot, the Chicago-based upscale convenience store and grocery chain, is opening a new location in the Tribune Tower. The company signed a lease with CIM Group and Golub & Company for a more than 1,700-square-foot retail space at the foot of the building on North Michigan Avenue. The store, set to open in the spring, will include a dining patio that faces Pioneer Court, and it'll join other retail tenants at Tribune Tower like the Museum of Ice Cream, which will take up over 13,000 square feet and open next summer. Crane's reporter Catherine Davis has more.
Foxtrot's expansion to the Tribune Tower comes on the heels of the company announcing plans to open 50 new stores in the next 2 years. Foxtrot announced that over the summer, and then in October opened a new store in the Gold Coast at 23 West Maple. That was its 10th store, which means the Tribune store will be Foxtrot's 11th Chicago location, and I think it's 16th overall. Foxtrot also has stores in Washington, D.C. and Dallas, and is looking at other cities to expand to in the future. Much of Foxtrot's expansion is fueled by venture capital funding that it's raised. To date, the company has raised $65 million from investors that include Morningstar founder Joe Mansueto and Walter Robb, who is the former co-CEO of Whole Foods. Foxtrot has also raised funding from more traditional VC firms based in New York and Los Angeles. I think the expansion to the Tribune Tower will really help Foxtrot grow its brand awareness more generally. Many of the Foxtrot locations are concentrated in neighborhoods, so like Fulton Market, Wicker Park, Lincoln Park, and having this location at the bottom of the Tribune Tower right on the Mag Mile, that's a high traffic area where a lot of tourists come through. So, you know, if you're not from Chicago and in the neighborhoods and aware of your local Foxtrot, this new location, you know, is probably one of the first places that you will be introduced to the brand if you're visiting the city. So it'll be interesting to watch what the foot traffic is like there. I know that the developers are reconstructing Pioneer Court, making it more accessible and sort of a place to hang out rather than just a place to walk through. So the store opens this spring, and we'll see what it brings.
That's Crane's Daily Gist for now. You can check in on our continuous news feed at chicagobusiness.com. Thanks so much to today's guest, David Manilow. You can follow all of our conversations on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to get your audio on demand. And remember to rate and review Crane's Daily Gist, because that's the best way for others to discover our episodes. You'll find hashtag Crane's Daily Gist on Twitter, Facebook, and on LinkedIn. Our show is produced by Todd Manley at Earsight Studios. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll meet you right back here next time.